Welcome to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addict Trauma Specialists, hosted by Dr. Jake Porter. APSATS is a nonprofit organization providing professional training and compassionate support to partners affected by problematic sexual behavior and betrayal trauma. In each episode, Dr. Jake guides a conversation of enlightening insights and practical tools to empower those affected by sex addiction and betrayal trauma to use their voices and live their values. The mission of Betrayal Recovery Radio is to offer hope to those in need of healing and growth to those moving through grief. And now, here's your host, Dr. Jake Porter.
Well, hello. Welcome to this new episode of Betrayal Recovery Radio. I am your host, Dr. Jake Porter, and I am so grateful to be here. I was actually just reflecting on how funny, I guess, not funny in a ha-ha way, but funny in an interesting sort of way, that I'm getting the opportunity, the privilege, the joy of doing this now for APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists. And here's why. Let me tell you why. So I am in recovery myself. And when I first got into this work professionally and went through my CSAT training and started doing counseling work, I said, I'm going to work with addicts. I'm going to work with specifically male addicts. That's all I want to do. I'm good at that. I know how to do that. I get it. And it wasn't until actually an APSATS trained coach who lived near me, Kathy Reynolds, who many of you will be familiar with her name. We now get to work together. She contacted me and said, hey, would you be willing to work with some partners? And I said, no. Actually, I ended up saying yes, but not after at first being very, very hesitant. And that was a world that seemed unknown to me. I had not gone through APSATS training at that point. But beginning to work with an APSATS trained coach, learning from her about betrayal trauma, radically shifted the work that I was doing with addicts individually. And it expanded my heart and the compassion I had for partners. And I began to actually see some women who had been betrayed, who then began asking me if I would see them and their husbands together as a couple. And I thought, absolutely not. I'm not prepared to do that. I don't know how to work with couples. That sounds like a headache. That sounds like a lot of work. But, you know, they asked and they asked. And finally, I began to see a couple here and a couple there. And that is really when I just had a taste of what has now become a passion. I love working with couples. Yeah, working with individuals is great as well, but I love doing work with couples. And the reason why I think that this became such a passion of mine is that early on, just intuitively, as I was trying to see what works and what doesn't and what makes a difference, I began to see the power of what can happen in that primary attachment relationship when it is placed forefront in the recovery process, what it does not just for the betrayed partner who deserves and is often longing for the healing of that attachment rupture in the relationship, but also for the partner that did the betraying, the partner with the addiction, how their experiences of repair began to spill over and affect and amplify what was happening in a sort of individual recovery track. Many of you are familiar with the broad strokes of the history of this field of sex addiction treatment, that the early traditional models put addicts and their partners on these two parallel tracks, and partners were often pathologized. And then APSATS came along, and Barbara Steffens, her research, and many others came along building on that. And we began to see that this isn't codependence. This isn't co-addiction. This isn't something we need to pathologize. And that way, this is a trauma response to this discovery. And it radically began to shift treatment in that way. And now we're understanding the power of using, leveraging that primary attachment relationship, that marriage or that relationship between the addicted partner and the betrayed partner, for the good of them all. I often call it the triple win, the win for the addicted partner, the betrayed partner, and the relationship that they share. And that is why I am so excited today to bring back a very familiar voice on Betrayal Recovery Radio, the founder of this podcast and the one who was the host up until I was given this opportunity just a short time ago, Carol, the coach, Carol Jurgensen Sheets. And I'm bringing her back for a really important reason, to talk about her newest book that will be released any day now, and her training that I get to co-teach with her through APSATS, which is called the IRCM training. IRCM stands for Early Recovery Couples Empathy Model. And it is a model that makes this so practical, makes this so helpful, a way of leading couples at the early stages of recovery toward some initial repair of their relationship. And then at the same time, this isn't just good for the relationship, it's good for each of them individually. Her book that's coming out soon is called Help Them Heal. It's a practical guide that couples are going to be able to take and work through some of these exercises together or with an IRCM trained coach or clinician. And so I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Now, before I go to this conversation with Carol, I do want to say one more thing. If you are a therapist, you are a coach, a counselor, or you're a religious leader, and you find yourself on the front lines working with couples who have experienced betrayal because of hidden addiction or chronic infidelity, and you would like to go through the IRCM training. So this episode is being released on Thursday, March 24th, 2022. You have through tomorrow, the 25th of February, I'm sorry, of March, till tomorrow to sign up. There are just a couple of spots left. A couple of spots have been held back for people who might want to take this IRCM training that is next week, March 28th through 31st. It'll be an online training, and you can go to APSATS.org to find out more about that, or email info@APSATS.org. To register for that. There are just a few spots left. You got to get on it right now before those get taken. They've been held back, and we would love to fill up that training and have it maxed out. So if you listen to this podcast and you think this is good stuff, I'd like to know more, I'd like to be able to help couples with this, please jump in and register for this training right away. One more quick announcement before I go to this conversation with Carol. My Choose Connection Summit is a free resource. It's 100% free. I've got lots and lots of experts. Carol is one of them. Dr. Barbara Steffens is one of them. Kathy Reynolds, who I mentioned earlier, at APSATS trained coach, is one of them. Lots of people from the APSATS community are speaking at this online summit that is this weekend, March 25th through 27th. That is a free ticket. All you have to do is go to ChooseConnectionSummit.com, ChooseConnectionSummit.com, to claim that free ticket. All the material is going to be free for 48 hours from the time that it's aired. That's a resource I want to put out there to as many people who could benefit from it as possible. So go claim your free ticket, share it with others in your support group so they can get the benefit of it as well. All right, this is going to be a great conversation where we talk about the power of empathy, for couples in early recovery and beyond into late recovery. So thanks, sit back and enjoy this conversation. Hello, Carol. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, Jake, you know I wouldn't miss it. You're one of my dearest friends.
Yes, you are a great friend, great colleague. Say that I had the joy and the privilege of actually getting to see it with my own two eyes and write an endorsement for it. Help Them Heal by Carol the Coach. And here's what I love about it. Okay. As someone who's, I don't mind claiming that I'm a little nerdy. I'm a little geeky. I can be a little wonkish. I'm a college professor, all of that. You took so much of what fundamentally I work with couples in very much the same way. You made it so practical and so accessible to these couples in this book. is really phenomenal.
Well, thank you, because I know that you had to read it to be able to write the endorsement. And my hope was that I wanted couples to start from the beginning and work through the three stages of partner betrayal. And we have done a really good job of making couples feel like they can help each other to be safe. But yes, there's a lot of grief, mourning, and anger that goes into that too. And so, you know, for my book, Help Her Heal, I really wanted him to help her heal. I felt like that expedited the process, if that's what she wanted. If she didn't want it, she's in the driver's seat. She gets to decide. And that's so this new book is, it's a continuation of Help Her Heal. Help Them Heal teaches them to work together to increase safety and to do all that grief and anger work and then get over there to post-traumatic growth, because that's actually what we want for them. We want them, if they choose to stay together, we want them to get to the place where they work together to feel like they're making a difference in the lives of others and their own.
Yes, absolutely. That's so good. And what brings your model together, like the linchpin holding it all together, is empathy. So in fact, you've named your model ERCOM, which stands for Early Recovery Couples Empathy Model. And I mean, before today, a lot of people thought, well, couples work has to start later. It can't start until like phase two, and maybe even a little way into phase two of those three phases that you outline. But you're saying no. You're saying there's a way to start in a careful and intentional way from the outset, doing work with this couple, which I agree with. And it's about empathy. Can you say more about the role of empathy in this model?
Well, absolutely. But I want our viewers to be very clear. I do not, and this is going to make a lot of professionals mad, I do not believe you can do couples therapy when couples are hurting so badly from sex addiction and all the wounding that that has done. This model, which is based on empathy, is also an opportunity to do early recovery couples work.
Right.
And that is a protocol that I actually developed. I teach the protocol in the book so that they can do that together and learn how to empathize with each other as they go through this journey together. Because, Jake, there's no worse devastation other than a loss of a child than partner betrayal. That's my belief. Mm. That's what I've witnessed. Mm. And because she's so devastated and because she has distress and trauma to her brain, we need to walk through this journey slowly. And what I have noticed is when he started doing those help her heal exercises, she was feeling better.
That's right.
I felt we could improve on the process. I really felt like it was possible for them to do the work together. So it wasn't just him doing some assignments and sharing them with her. It was her fine-tuning the assignments and saying, this is what I need, and this is what I want, and you got to help me by doing this. And so with her feedback, it just exploded into more safety. Mm. And then he could feel safe to do empathy. You know, there's no doubt he doesn't know how to do empathy. Now, whether he knew how to do it before the addiction started or whether the addiction robbed him of that, he doesn't know how to do empathy. And so I teach him how to do that with her, and I have her watch him so she knows what he's doing. And it really is a couple's journey, and it really is early recovery couple's work. And ERCA, and I was so impressed you said it so well, the early recovery couples empathy model are all sorts of exercises that they can do together by themselves or with a specialist. Because, you know, Jake, you and I are training professionals, coaches,
yes, we are.
clinicians across the world how to do this work.
Right. And I mean, since we're talking about that, let's talk about that for a minute. You did invite me, and I'm so honored to get to be a part of that training that's happening through APSATS, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists. And so if people wanted to find an IRCM trained clinician or coach, how would they do that, Carol?
Well, when the book comes out, I listed all the clinicians and coaches that went through the training, and they're identified in three ways. They either have gotten their certification already. We tell them to go slow, and it's just been so remarkable because the ones that have gotten training and then became certified are still, and you know this, having supervision with us because they want to make sure they do it right. And then the next category are the people that are in the process of getting their certification, but they're not done yet. And again, this protocol spoon feeds to them as well as to our clients, to our couples, how to do it. And then we've got the people that said, I love the training. I don't think I'm going to get certified right now. I am using it, but I am not able to commit to the supervision it takes to really get the certification. So in the back of the book, you'll have them there, or they can go to sexhelpwithcarolthecoach.com.
Okay.
When they go to that, it automatically flips into IRCM, and you just have to go to the place that says find help, click on that, and it will give an entire directory of the people that are in this process. And you know, we've got a new class starting this next month. So we're hoping to deliver this in so many different ways across the world. The feedback I'm getting from the people that are now using it is that it is a game changer in keeping the anxiety and the anger down so that they can really work on finding safe ways to connect. And it's all about connection and intimacy. And yet we know they can't do intimacy till they feel safe and process their own feelings.
Right. And I've noticed that as well, as I've done some of the consultation and supervision with some of the folks who are working towards certification. They're bringing these cases in. And one of the things that I ask them about is, you know, if this is someone that they've seen long term, what was the work like before they started doing IRCM versus after? And here's what I think part of the beauty of it is, and what makes it effective, is that like a laser, the focus is on empathy and using empathy as the means of first, in that first phase, establishing safety. In that second phase, being able to do that grief work together. In that third phase, you know, moving into post-traumatic growth together, having a common vision for the relationship. And so there's this sort of cascading effect as that capacity for empathy grows in both of them. Mm-hmm. Which may throw some partners off, right?
Mm-hmm. Understandably.
Mm-hmm. And yet, that's what's happening.
100%. And one of the things that I realized when I was helping men to do Help Her Heal is that they weren't even that good at explaining what they were doing. And so she didn't know what AVR was, which is an empathy statement that acknowledges her pain, validates her primary feeling, and reassures her of what he's doing to make a difference. She didn't even know about it. And that's when I said, three things need to change in my life as a clinician and as a trainer and as an educator. One, I need to pull her in from the beginning. I need to have her and him in my office the minute one of them calls me. Now, that is way different than what we've been taught in our graduate school. You know, they say work with the identified patient. You know, but don't pull them both in. It'll be overwhelming. Well, it isn't overwhelming. And when I do that, and when our clinicians and coaches have been trained to do that, they're able to give resources to them right off the bat and start that empathy process and have them begin to work on that from day one.
So, Yeah, I want to pause and just sit on that for a second, because what you're saying is going to throw some people off. All right, there are going to be some people. I mean, but I think in a good way. Okay, I might be biased, but I think it's in a good way. There are going to be people who are listening to this. Maybe they've been clients and they've been taught this other paradigm, or maybe there are some helping professionals listening to this and they go, whoa. We all know. You've got to go do your own work first. Go do your own recovery, your own process first, and then you can come back and do the couple's work. And what you're saying is, I've also been saying this for a few years now. I don't know about that. Mm-hmm. What if we can put the relationship front and center in a safe and intentional way, of course, mm-hmm. but from the outset? What if the relationship is the context to do the work?
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly did the wounding. And
thank you.
I'm not opposed to that totally. But mm-hmm. what I'm opposed to is typically she would make the call.
Right.
Say she wanted her husband seen by a certified sexual addictions therapist.
Right.
And he'd come in and he would tell me she was either kicking and screaming at home or she was in the fetal position. She was so shell-shocked by the trauma of what she was dealing with. And she didn't even know it was trauma. She didn't know that that's what was going on with her brain. So when I said, I don't know about that, I do believe some of the time when I'm working with them as couples, I will refer them to people that know this process so that he can get a little bit of extra work.
Oh, sure.
When we're doing couples work with the both of them, she may need a little eye movement desensitization reprocessing or a little brain spotting or something to help us work along. But truly, the premise is they do it together, and then we decide what resources they may need individually as a couple, in the family, or whatever.
Absolutely. I agree. So, okay. So let's get into some of the work. So a lot of folks listening here, maybe is there an example of something practical? Let's say a couple who identifies in phase one, they're just looking for some safety and stability right now. What does that look like for them? How can they work toward that, Carol? What's one example?
Well, in Help or Heal, I asked him to come up with a willingness list. What is he willing to do to make her feel safe?
Yes.
And then I realized she really needed to have an opportunity to say what she needed. You know, Jake, oftentimes they're so shell-shocked, they're in so much trauma that they don't know what they need. Their head is spinning.
Yes.
And so within the safe constraints of the counseling session, we sit down and talk about what is it that you need to feel safer. And one of the best experiences for both of them is that she's not always sure it's fair to ask for what she needs.
Mm.
She doesn't know if it's possible, and she doesn't know if that's too controlling. And to have an IRCM specialist say, oh, whatever you need, we'll have to get a buy-in from him, but let's talk about this together. Well, the men that I work with really will do whatever it takes. So the second part of that exercise is that she adds to that list. They talk about how he can provide that to her, which is that early recovery couples work. And then they go home and try it and come back and talk about the solution. You know, how did it work? What needs to be tweaked? And she'll say, I couldn't believe it. I knew he was really trying because he set his alarm to get home on time because he heard me say, I'm so tired of him forgetting to let me know when he's coming home. Now, the average clinician might think that is controlling. But what we know is that our couples need extreme measures to be back into that world of safety. And they don't always have to practice that.
Right.
In my book, Help Them Heal, I actually asked them from the get-go to write a declaration statement for their marriage, knowing that they're both so hurt and in pain. I have them write down one thing that they would like for the future. Well, that almost seems inconceivable because they don't even know who he is. And they always say, you know, I don't know what I can trust. I can't trust anything I experienced in the past. I can't trust what's in the present. And I sure as heck can't trust what's in the future. But I ask them to please bypass their fear and imagine, if they can, what intention they would like for their marriage if they continue to work on the marriage. And this is almost an incomprehensible exercise, and yet it is so healing for both of them to be able to say what they would like for the future. And, you know, you better believe, Jake, you know, they are together. He wants to see what she says first, almost always. And she's saying, well, okay, in a perfect world, if we could get over all this, I would like to have a husband I can trust.
Yes, that's right.
I would like to stop the activation in my body from driving me into terrible thoughts about our relationship. I want to feel normal again.
I was just going to say that, to be clear, you're not asking them to paint some rosy rainbows and unicorns and fairy tales, stick your head in the sand. No, when you're talking about that declaration, it's in line with what the devastation that's happened, but it's just about a little bit of hope. And what I've heard from those a lot is things like, I want a marriage in which we're actually partners with each other, in which we actually walk through life together and can trust each other and know we have each other's backs. Because often those weren't the dynamics beforehand, right? But once the gig's up for the addict and he begins to get some clarity about what's lost, and you know, he wants that too. And to hear his partner say that, man, that's like a steroid shot. That's a shot in the arm. She's open to that. It's powerful.
Well, you're spot on when you said it gives them hope, because the truth is, my very first chapter is called Beacon of Hope. And I want, with this work, to be a beacon of hope while they're dealing with the collateral damage. I want them still to have some hope that they can make this work. Another exercise I do is that I have him write down all the things that he has done to wound her and what he is dealing with now. As you said it earlier, once the fog is cleared, he has recovered a certain amount of time, and he is shell-shocked because he can't believe he did this to her. He can't believe his rationalizations for why, you know, he told himself what she doesn't know won't hurt her, or this is only pornography, or, you know, we weren't having good sex anyway. And then he wakes up, he's woke, so to speak, and he's saying, none of those things were the reason I was doing the things I was doing.
That's right.
My brain was on fire with this compulsivity, and I couldn't get off the tracks. Now, I do want to say, because it sounds like you and I are really talking about couples that are in that initial stage. Discovery has occurred within a month, two, three, four, five, six months before. But you and I know that we do a lot of work with couples that have been fighting this battle for 20, 30, 40 years.
Years, that's right.
And they haven't gotten any traction. She's still afraid.
That's right. And to go back to that model, the multidimensional partner trauma model, which you use in IRCM, it's either, I love that there's a model we can go back to look for, either there's still not safety and security, or that second phase of grief, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Carol. Mm-hmm. Often what happens is they weren't taught how to grieve together, right? Your brain is going to grieve. Your brain is going to make meaning. Your brain is going to assemble a new reality and all that. But if they don't do that together, now they're just living two parallel lives. They don't have a shared story, right? Can you speak to that need for couples?
Well, you know, they're so confused because they haven't had the proper psychoeducation, and her brain really is traumatized, and she is really angry and is grieving, whether she wants to or not, but she doesn't know how to process it. And if you couple that with a traumatized brain, that amygdala, which is the primal part of the brain, sends messages to the limbic system that she was rejected. And so you couple all that together, and he thinks she's just angry, but in essence, she's still dealing with some residual brain stuff from the trauma. Now, APSATS has this model, multidimensional partner trauma model, that was based on a trauma model from Judith Herman,
right,
who worked with trauma survivors, tsunamis, and hurricanes, and combat veterans. And so what our partners have faced is exactly like that. And that's why that model from APSATS works so well.
Yes.
And when they get that information as a couple, and when he can hold her pain, when he can sit with her and do what I call the Vesuvius, which is she has 3 to 5 minutes to share anything and everything she is feeling, no holes barred. I encourage them to do it with a specialist, but I wrote it so that they could do it with each other. And she is emoting about how she couldn't trust him. She couldn't even trust her own father who cheated on her mother. Now she has a husband who promised he'd never do that to her. And all of a sudden now her whole world is contaminated with people she can't trust. And she's going on and on and on and raising her voice and perhaps ushering a few cuss words and, you know,
maybe
and is really emoting. And he's sitting there with a force field so that he doesn't take it in and go into shame, but also holding it for her and witnessing it so that they can talk about it in the office. They can talk about it and write about it afterwards. He can tell her where he felt that pain in his body while he was watching her pain. And they can just go back and forth with how horrendous this was. And she feels that true connection of empathy. And she gets it. She gets that he's learning things that he never had,
right,
that he needs to know to be a better person. And
right.
Not to tarnish what we're talking about here, but I've heard many a partner say, you know, one of the reasons I'm in this is because he's working so hard and I don't want to leave him and then have him be the new and improved for somebody else.
For someone else. That's right. That's right. I've heard that as well. And I tell partners, you know, I do not give guarantees in this line of work because there's too much outside of my control. But I will say, a person who truly gives themselves over to the recovery process is going to come out the other end with a character and an integrity that is hard to find in this world. Mm-hmm. If they truly give themselves to the process. And you're right. A partner who's been betrayed deserves that at the end of the day. That level of integrity and character.
And again, you just named and claimed it because this world is filled with temptation. And this world is filled with sexual stimulus.
That's right. It's
very, very, very disheartening to watch it all around us, from ads on the buses to commercials to movies to being at church with other people that are wearing things they shouldn't wear. And so there's a lot of temptation going down. And when men learn how to manage their temptation, their urges, their cravings, when they learn the recovery tools they need. And, you know, that is just as important as empathy in IRCM, that they get those skills down.
Yes.
They've learned how to be authentic. They've learned how to be transparent. They've learned how to be honest, and they've learned how to protect their brain for the future, for the moment. And when they do that, they have integrity all over the place. And then they hopefully will teach it to other people in their program, whatever program that is. But, you know, Jake, I talk about post-traumatic growth, and for many couples, well, I want to say, in the organization that we both are a part of, one of them, APSATS has a lot of professionals that have been partners.
Sure, and that's right.
ITAP, the Certified Sex Addiction training that you and I both received, there are a lot of recovering addicts.
That's right.
And these two groups of people have been formed because they knew they wanted to give back. Once they found that freedom and liberation from their pain and from their addiction, they wanted to give back. And so post-traumatic growth may be doing something like that, or it may be putting together a Bible study, or it may be sitting in church taking care of the two-year-olds, or it may be feeding the homeless in their city. I mean, it doesn't have to be huge.
That's
it
right.
It may be spending Wednesday afternoons with their grandchildren when they didn't do that before, and they certainly didn't do it together.
That's right. You know who I think about when I think about, well, I think about a lot of people, but one of our colleagues who I just think it's so cool is Sarah, you know, that leads the trips out to the Grand Canyon. I mean, talk about someone who takes her passion and just, you know, has used it in a really creative way to help people find their own post-traumatic growth. So it can look like so many different things. Yeah.
Well, you know, I have this partners online course, and it's how to find post-traumatic growth. And it is, I think I got this right, seven partners who found it, one of which divorced, the rest are married. And then it's a couple who found it and are working together in this field. And then it's a male partner who struggles a little bit more because there just haven't been the resources that he believes should be there for him. But he's still with his wife, and he wants more post-traumatic growth. Okay. What it comes down to for partners is most of them had their aha moments after their husband had been in good recovery, after they had done the grief and the anger work, and when they decided to create a life that supported things that brought them joy and made them happy and had intentional self-care. It is so inspiring to watch these women talk about when they found dancing, when they started singing out loud, when they started working with art, when they used their brain to fulfill themselves separate from what they had been through. They began to really believe in life again and in themselves and in something other than partner betrayal. And let's face it, you and I both know, we do not want a partner defined by partner betrayal. We want her to know that.
That's right. That's right. So that it's a part of the story, but not the end of the story. I mean, and Carol, I think that you, within our little niche field of sex addiction and betrayal trauma, you're one of the people who I've heard talk about post-traumatic growth the most. And the theme of the Choose Connection Summit this year is from grief to growth, right? And that's what you're talking about, moving from pain and finding healing that then brings life for a new way to live and move about the world. Yeah, that's really, really great. So one of my favorite exercises, if I can mention it from your book and from the IRCM model, and maybe you can talk a little about this. This would be in that second phase. It's the one, I believe it's titled, His Shame, Her Pain. And it, to me, that one's so pivotal, so crucial. Did you hear me just invent a word there?
I did. Pivotable. I loved it.
Pivotable. I think I'm going to write that one down for later. Yeah, but that's a beautiful one. Can you talk a little bit about that exercise?
First of all, tell me, because you know we know each other so well.
Yes.
Why were you so impressed by that exercise?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because it's what it's getting at doing is something that I move couples through a lot because it's so important. Here's what we see happen. I know that there are going to be hundreds of couples hearing this who are going to identify with the picture I'm about to paint. Okay. Mm-hmm. She's hurting. She's in pain. And we know from research on attachment and interpersonal neurobiology and all this, that one of the most important things to reduce emotional pain is feeling connected to the people important to you, right? Sure. So here she's feeling all this pain, but when her pain is activated, his shame gets activated. And when his shame comes up, he does one of a handful of things. He shrinks down, disappears into nothing, like just right, shuts down. He runs, or he bulks up and gets angry and, you know, defensive. And so now she's left all alone with that pain. Mm-hmm. But if he can tolerate her pain without going into his shame, that's a game changer, right? Because now she's no longer alone with it, but he also, This is the way I say it to a lot of the guys I work with. Now you know by experience that the feeling of shame doesn't have to drive the bus. You've got more control than you think.
Absolutely. And so that involves so many things. I mean, we have so many shame and pain exercises in IRCAM. And I'm going to tell on myself here.
Uh-oh.
Because I thought it was so clever. Until I learned better. And when you know better, you do better.
Sure.
And I used to have this tagline that said, it's the addict that feels the shame, but it's the partner that feels the pain.
Mm.
And I believed that until I started working with partners. And then I realized, holy moly, there's lots and lots and lots of shame for both of them.
That's right. You know,
she's wondering, is something wrong with her? Is she bad? Because she wants this marriage to work, or because she's staying in this marriage for the finances,
or because what do people think about her? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Can she go to the grocery store and know for a fact that nobody else knows? Because we all know that when there's acting out, it's not just two people. There are other people that more than likely know this story on some level. So she never feels safe in her community, and she wonders what they must think of her. And of course, one of the most painful ones, Jake, is if the kids know, or if they're deciding that they're going to tell the kids, which is a part of an IRCAM exercise, they want to know that their kids won't judge them. And she worries that, of course, her kids are going to judge her for putting up with that, even if they want mom and dad to stay together. She worries about what's this teaching them about a healthy marriage, about a healthy family. And so as IRCAM specialists, we really talk about, if the kids know, how do you do the collateral damage? If the kids don't know, when, where, and how do you share?
Yes.
The reality of being imperfect, making horrible mistakes, and wanting to do better. And I just feel like that's such a hard load for both of them to carry when there's that much pain and shame. And so we have exercises that deal with that, and they tell each other why they feel that way. Now, with addicts, I really have to help them to insulate themselves from her pain and shame because of the three things, the three reactions you said. He either avoids and disappears. He runs because for two reasons. One, it's uncomfortable for him, but sure. also he thinks if he leaves the situation, she'll feel better because right. he's not right there.
Yeah. If and he's the problem, then he'll just get out. Right.
Yeah. And then that last one, which of course is getting defensive and, you know, well, I want you to stop saying things aloud where they would hear. And anyway, what we do at IRCAM is we really help them navigate those harder issues that are very specific to partner betrayal, but the shame and the pain runs so deep, sometimes starting decades before the partner betrayal. You know, I mean,
that's right.
It's when dad yeah. said, you're not worth anything. Or mom mm. said, you're the reason we're getting a divorce. You know, all those statements that bring about horrible trauma that never gets dealt with. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. So, so moving from grief to growth. All right. So from grief to growth, they've got to learn to feel their feelings, you know, identify them, name them, make space for them together, have a vision for the future. You know, just throw out some wisdom for couples. Maybe they found themselves stuck. Maybe it's that couple you described earlier. Maybe they've been at this for 20 years. What's one or two changes they can make? And I love how you're able to make things so practical. One or two practical changes to get some traction toward moving forward.
Well, you know, I'm a big believer in the IRCAM way, and the IRCAM way says that she's the driver for the first 3 to 5 years after they learn some of this stuff. And so my biggest practical advice for this couple is that she needs to find a part of herself that she can feel good about. And maybe she doesn't feel good. Or maybe she in some way felt that she was responsible for something about this. And the truth of the matter is, no, you didn't. And he wants to help you heal, but he doesn't have relationship skills. And so we have to teach him those skills. This is a slow process. I would love to say the IRCAM way changes things in 8 months, right. 18 yeah. months. But I'll tell you what, when Jake said earlier that men in recovery are better than 95% of those men out there, what I know is when he has good relational skills, he's a better dad. He's
That's right.
He's a better parent. I said dad, but a parent in general. He yeah. can take care of his family better, and he does better at work. He does better with the dog. He is able to empathize and put himself in anybody's shoes. He's able to communicate about it, and he's really able to do something that we call sliding glass moments. Mm. And sliding glass moments is a term that John Gottman talked about. And it's where you get to open the sliding glass doors and decide which path you're going to take, which direction are you going to go. And I teach people to lean into each other. Because even if the partner says, stay the heck away from me, if she's in it, and she's working on this relationship, she wants to see that the addict is working too.
That's
and
right.
And she may not show that she's happy about it, but the truth is she is. And if she just decides to coexist, I say that's okay too. But I want more for our couples.
Yeah.
And you deserve more as a couple. Yeah. And a lot of good resources out there, but you have to have the courage to be vulnerable.
And oh, that's so good.
And empathy go hand in hand.
Yeah. And what you just said, Carol, you just put in such a clear and succinct way something that's so fundamental to me. I mean, that's why I call this the Choose Connection Summit. we will, in the long run, we will not regret choosing connection. It can be painful in the moment. You know, we can have stumbles along the way, but in that scenario you just painted, right? So she's still, you know, hurt and mad as a hornet. And she says, get away from me. And here's what I want you addicts to hear. There's still a way to choose connection in response to that.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing to do is not run away, say, well, fine. Or, you know, not, it's not to shrink back or melt into a puddle of shame. It's to say, it makes so much sense that you want me to run. To get away. It makes so much sense that you want to run away from me. It makes so much sense you don't want to see my face. I've hurt you so badly. I see how hurt you are. And I'm going to respect what you ask. And the moment you're ready for me to get a little bit closer, I'm right here. Which is what? Empathy. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what allows me to do it.
And it's a choice to let her know that there's a connection ahead. When she's
yes.
ready.
And when she's ready.
You said hope, and hope is so important, but
yes.
choices too. And I say you have to choose to find ways to be safe. You have to choose to grieve and be angry and deal with all this hard stuff. And then you have to choose, as you got one foot in the grief and anger and one toe in post-traumatic growth. And in the book, I talk about this. You have to make a choice to give this more of a try. Because when you do give post-traumatic growth more of a try, you liberate yourself to your own power.
That's
in
right.
the relationship and out of the relationship. So
absolutely.
Don't cheat yourselves. I say in the book that he doesn't want to get to post-traumatic growth until she's there. Because that's what I found. He's waiting because he doesn't dare because he knows he caused all this pain.
Yeah.
Now, can I just say, if you are, as an addict, know you're narcissistic, I've got to help her heal group. And I'll have a guy occasionally say, I'm a narcissist. It's just who I am. It's where I start. And he's living with his wife, you know. Narcissists have trouble with this concept. They really do. I commend the men that have come into my helper heal and tried it on to see how it worked. The wife's always appreciated it. But Jake, you and I know that can be a characterological problem and that may not change. And if that's the case, if you have somebody who's gaslighting you all the time and he's narcissistic, I don't know that doing this work as a couple is really for you. I think you need to do this journey on your own. And that's why I wrote the book, Unleashing Your Power, because not everybody has a husband who's willing. But yeah. I would say way more than 50% of the addicts I work with, they've been socialized to want to fix things and they know they caused this pain and now they want to fix it and they don't know how. And that's what IRCM's about. It's teaching him how with her help and it's teaching him how to help her heal.
That's right. Yeah. I love that, Carol. Thank you. It helps them enter into a new paradigm. And this is the part that narcissists can have trouble with, a dyadic paradigm, if we want to get clinical, right? That I am a part, I am fundamentally a part of this relationship. It's not enmeshment. I'm not lost in it. I don't lose myself as an individual, but I'm choosing to make this relationship the survival unit. And we're doing this together and we're better off for it. And what you put together in IRCM in Help Them Heal, I really want to say, and if you're watching this summit, you know, I'm not doing this on most of my interviews. I'm not pushing products and books, but I just believe in this and it's so practical. It's so helpful. And so, the link, it will be right down there below where you can get to Carol's website and find that book. Carol, thank you so much for the work you do and for being a part of this and sharing with our couples all this wisdom?
Well, and for our listening audience, our viewers, if you will, Jake and I, we are doing this work together. And I picked Jake because we work so similarly, and we really, really do.
We do.
I've learned as much from him as Irkham has taught you, in part because you already knew it, you just didn't have that name. But also, when you have the connection of wanting to help people, you find the people in your life that can make that a reality. And I'm a mental health therapist for 42 years, but I'm also a coach. And a life coach believes that you can make your life happen. And that's what Irkham's all about. And so, Jake, thank you so much for being on this bandwagon. I know we've kind of said maybe we should take it on the road, right?
I've thought about it. I have. I've been thinking about that. It could be a lot of fun.
We'll talk further, but you know, I so appreciate your appreciation of this work, because we just got to keep finding things that help couples grow stronger and help them be happier.
Absolutely.
And this interview has been a real blessing for me.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Carol. Thank you, everybody. You can find Carol and her stuff in the links right here by the video, and we'll see you next time. You've been listening to Betrayal Recovery Radio, the official podcast of APSATS. If you've received help or hope from this episode, I encourage you to share it with someone you know. If you've not yet done so, please subscribe to our podcast on your favorite listening platform. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Jake Porter, and you can always email me directly at jake@apsats.org. I'd love to hear your ideas, questions, or comments about the show. Until next time, keep choosing to use your voice and live your values. It's good for you and for this world.